Good afternoon. It is a high holy day. We are excited to be able to be together in this. I must admit that looking into a camera is certainly not the same as looking at a crowd of lovely brethren. So I'm trying to get used to that. So I'm trying to imagine all of you out there on this holy day that we celebrate the last day of unleavened bread. I don't think that the days of unleavened bread have ever gone so fast. Somehow it just seemed like a couple of days and we're already at the end, but we will celebrate nonetheless. I'm going to open up with prayer. If you'll bow your heads, we'll open with prayer. Heavenly Father, we are blessed today to be able to come together, albeit virtually, on your high holy day, the last day of unleavened bread. It is that anniversary when the Israelites crossed over the Red Sea, when you rescued and delivered them from Egypt. It has so much meaning historically, but so much more meaning for us today and also into the future. So I pray, Father, that you would inspire the speaking, that you would allow your spirit to flow, that you would inspire the hearing as well, that we would be able to understand your word as we go through it, as we review the passages that we know so well, and see how we can apply them in our lives today. So we pray this and ask it in Jesus Christ's name. Amen. So the topic of the sermon this afternoon is Going Beyond Red Sea Road. We concluded the first day of Unleavened Bread with a moving song from Ellie Holcomb entitled Red Sea Road. And she went on to sing, "We buried dreams, said our goodbyes, God knows we ache. The question now is, how do we go on?" You know, going on is something that is discussed in various poems and songs throughout history. And it brings us to the question, actually, that I want to cover today. And that is, how do we go on when we, as today, reach Red Sea Road? How do we do that? Going on, again, as I mentioned, is a concept articulated by poets and songwriters to provide hope to the distraught in the, shall we say, the emotional box canyon at the end of Red Sea Road. And the Israelites on this day were in a box canyon with Pharaoh behind them, as we will see, and a sea before them, and they were distraught. That is often the way I think we find ourselves in, and in this case, it's an emotional box canyon. So going on again, to drop back to what people have written about it, Celine Dion famously sang the Titanic theme song, "My Heart Will Go On," and it's a kind of wistful reference to an afterlife in a movie where thousands perished in the depths of the sea. The days we celebrate, and the holy days in particular, provide a much more concrete path to the future than what she articulated in this theme song, and it's not wishful thinking. So the question then is not if we go on, but rather how. I'd like to explore how that is done by going to a scripture that is central to what occurred on this day. It's found over in Exodus chapter 14 and verse 15. "And the Lord spoke to Moses." This is a concise statement. And he said, "Why do you cry out to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward." So you might say that this is a one-word sermon. And the one word is forward. The way we get beyond Red Sea Road is to go forward. Actually, that is the only way to get beyond Red Sea, get beyond Egypt, get beyond all of the things that we leave behind at conversion, is to go forward one step at a time. And as we will see, we go forward in a similar manner. What the Israelites did back anciently is they went forward into the depth of the sea. I love this graphic because, I mean, if you, I've always wondered and imagined, you know, What would have really been like to walk down into a seabed that the wind overnight had dried out and see water piled up against the laws of nature on either side? And I've wondered, would I have been willing at the end of this Red Sea road to go forward? And I think I would have done it the same way that the Israelites did. I don't think they walked into the sea dry shod because they had so much faith. I think they walked in there out of sheer terror of having Pharaoh behind him. So I just want to provide a little bit of a context of this particular verse, and we'll go over to Numbers now. Numbers chapter 33 and verse 3. Here we see the departure from Egypt. They departed from Ramses on the 15th day of the first month, on the day after the Passover. You know, this is a good reference to understand that they went out at the end of the 14th and into the 15th. Actually, the Bible says that very clearly. But then the day after Passover, the children of Israel went out with boldness in the sight of all the Egyptians. Actually, some translations render it in Exodus that they went out in defiance. I mean, they went out with a high hand in the sight of all the Egyptians whom God had basically brought to their knees through the plagues. Continuing over in Exodus, and I have here, actually, I want to cite a Bible commentary on this particular verse. And this is from the Rational Bible Commentary. And Dennis Prager wrote this: "The Israelites welcomed their liberation from Egypt with joy." I mean, they went out with a high hand. They went out and they thought, you know, now we're leaving, we're finally not enslaved. But after they went out, they soon found themselves filled with fear and depression when they considered the responsibilities of their newfound freedom. The Israelites would later entertain the possibility of returning to Egypt. It is a truism that people value being cared for more than they value freedom. The experiment that we've been enjoying in the United States of America is actually an anomaly to what has occurred down through time. Most of the time, people were enslaved. And I think it was Patrick Henry who famously said, "Give me liberty or give me death." They were willing to die in order to be free, which stands in stark contrast to what most people have done through time. But continuing, now in Exodus chapter 14, verse 10, "And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord." So all of a sudden, after traveling what would have been 6 days going on 7, they find Pharaoh in hot pursuit, and they cried out to the Lord. And notice what the commentator had referenced earlier. Then he said to Moses, "Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt?" So everything was fine when they left Egypt. They spoiled them. They were marching along, and then Pharaoh catches up. And then what happened is they wanted to do what is so much a part of human nature, and that is they wanted to go right back into Egypt. Continuing in verse 11 and 12, we see that. They wanted to go back, not go forward. So the contra, to going forward is going back. And this is a psychological dynamic that just is part of human nature. When we are under duress, as they were, we tend to go back to whatever we are familiar with, and it is never a good idea. We only can go forward in actuality. So that's a very important important thing to remember. So here in Exodus chapter 14, verses 11 and 12, here we see what they were saying. Is this not the word we told you in Egypt? I mean, didn't we tell you? I mean, come on, Moses, we told you so. I mean, does this sound familiar? I mean, have you ever done that? I have. When you get under pressure is when you tend to want to go back to Egypt and say, I told you so. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. So that was their modus operandi, if you will, that continued throughout the wilderness experience, as we will see later. They continued to want to go back instead of going forward. Now we come to what Moses said. And I find it astonishing the leadership of Moses and what he told the Israelites. We read here in verse 13 and 14, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. Now that's leadership. I mean, Moses was able to tell the people, calm down, stand still, let's see the salvation of the Lord and what he's going to do in this particular situation. Now, I'm sure that the Israelites thought he's crazy. I mean, we've got Pharaoh's armored brigade behind us. We've got a sea before us and a mountain to our sides. We can't possibly escape. It is in this context that the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry out to me? You know, tell the children of Israel to go forward. I mean, that was it. I've found it interesting in cases like this and examples that God says, why do you cry out to me? I mean, just go forward. Now, I want to point out after I've read the next verse here, because I think it is interesting how God communicates with Moses. He says, but lift your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. Notice that he makes Moses responsible to divide the sea. It was the rod of Moses, and he had to stretch out his hand. But what I find most interesting is that the division of the sea in this particular text is attributed to Moses. Continuing, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. So that God told Moses to tell the Israelites, I just go forward. I mean, don't get worried about what is behind. And I think that is really, really instructive to us, particularly this year. This has been an incredibly unusual year. And you know, my experience has been that leading up to Passover typically is filled with a lot of frustrations and challenges, and as we have said, pre-Passover trials. It was different this year. The entire world was on trial. And it appears, and the data is still coming in, but it appears that the pandemic that we are experiencing currently will have peaked during the days of unleavened bread. And I find that to be interesting and instructive. So we've been under a lot of pressure over the past number of weeks as a nation, as individuals, but I think we can look forward because we understand in a way that most people do not what God is doing, and we will see how this all ends up because nobody knows. Believe me, the experts don't know. They do not know how the startup of the United States of America is going to look like. no matter what somebody tells you. This has never been done before. So this is literally a case where we are going to go back out, and we'll talk about this in a minute, after this day that we celebrate in our homes virtually, we will go back out into the wilderness of this world. And we will need manna. Don't rely on stimulus checks. We will need the manna given from heaven to be able to go forward, because we're in for some really difficult times. Circling back to Exodus chapter 14, "And indeed I will harden," this is God speaking, "the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. So I will gain honor over Pharaoh, over all his army, his chariots, and his horsemen. Then the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I have gained honor for myself over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen." So this was about showing who God is. And I've wondered, I'm observing to see how God uses this particular pandemic to show who he is. And, you know, I found it really interesting in our community here, in the time leading up to the Passover. You know, I spoke, I guess it's a little over 2 weeks ago now, about Passover. I know a number of people in the community had tuned in because they were talking to me about Passover and what it all means. We had people observing the night to be much observed in their homes here in the community. I know that from Facebook, and also know the people that are doing it. So we'll see what the outcome of that is. Continuing, "Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea," and then here, the parting of the Red Sea is attributed to the Lord. So you have both. Moses had his role to play. God made it, God's instruction to Moses was that he would have to part the sea by putting forward the rod and divide it. And I think that is, we have to understand that. Years and years ago, when I first came into the church, an elder told me, he said, "John, what is 2 times 0? And I'm like, you know, I learned that in fourth grade. 0. Well, he said, "What is 5 times 0? I said, "Well, 0. What's the point?" He said, "The point is this. Until you put forward effort, God cannot multiply the effort." And this was the case with Moses. God told Moses to stretch out his hand and divide the sea, and then God empowered that, and that remains the case today. We have to act, and then God can empower it. If we do not act, God cannot empower it. Continuing, "So the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on the right and on their left." This blows away the theory that somehow the Israelites just were crossing over a swamp that somehow God dried out overnight. This was a supernatural event. Waters normally don't stack up. In this case, they did. And they went, as it says here, "They went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left." So that's the record of the Bible. God puts it out there, and he makes really big claims. And I believe God. I'll take his word for it. Not some commentator who tries to figure out how this might have occurred by natural means. This was a miracle that God did in order to show the Egyptians his sovereignty. Continuing in verse 23, "And the Egyptians pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, all of Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen." You might note that Pharaoh didn't go in after them. That's also an interesting topic. But the Egyptians thought, hey, you know, if the Israelites can walk through, this is our chance to get him. We'll drive through. And here's where it gets to be a little bit humorous. "Now it came to pass in the morning watch," in the morning watch, that's early in the morning, "that the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud, and he troubled the army of the Egyptians." Okay, that's an interesting turn of phrase, but it's the next verse that I really like. And he took off their chariot wheels so that they drove them with difficulty. Now, I happen to have grown up driving horses and buggies. And this is, you know, I can really envision this. This is the understatement. You know, you have your chariot wheels fall off and your chariot starts dragging on the ground. The horses start kicking. And so, you know, to say that they drove them with difficulty is a great understatement. So the Egyptians at that point realized they were in trouble. Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights them against the Egyptians. So they recognized that they were in trouble. And then again, here we get back to the mathematical equation. Moses had to stretch out his hand so the Lord could act. And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. When the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depth while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. This is why this day is so great. I know we don't call it the last great day, but in fact, it is a great day, because in the space of a week, the Israelites were set free and escaped out of Egypt, and the military might of that empire was vanquished. That's how fast it can happen. And I think in the context of where we're at today, we had back in February the best and strongest economy that America has ever seen. We had unemployment levels that were historic lows in just about every category. And all it took was a virus to stop everything. I mean, who could have imagined it? I mean, no one. I have asked the question, and I think it's a legitimate one, you know, if a virus can do this to us, what happens if we have a real problem? I'm not trying to minimize the effects of COVID-19. I'm just saying this is a problem. I can think of a lot of other problems that would be much more devastating. So we see how important it is that we rely on God and not on any man or any country for that matter. Exodus chapter 14, verse 31 concludes this way. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt, so the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. And of course, we have the hymn that is sung and the dancing that is done, and they are ready to march. They are ready to go forward all the way to the promised land, or so it might seem. So now we're going to pivot into the New Testament, into 1 Corinthians chapter 10. This gives a New Testament perspective on this same event. Paul writes to the Corinthians, interestingly enough, a Gentile congregation. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses, in the cloud and in the sea, all ate the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink. I mean, this is a very familiar passage, and it connects and makes a very important theological statement, and that is, they drank of the same spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. This is, I think, the most definitive statement that identifies Jesus Christ with the God of the Old Testament. But then we get to the next point. They went forward into the depths of the sea. They were baptized, as it were, to be able to cross the wilderness of the world, in their case, the Sinai Desert, to the promised land. And here is the statement that Paul makes. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these things became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they lusted. So we have come to the end of Red Sea Road when the sun goes down this evening, and the command is the same to us as it was to the Israelites, and that is, we need to go forward out into the wilderness of this world. And I hope that we can learn the lesson and do so with confidence and boldness, so that we will be able to, in a short period of time, comparatively speaking, certainly less than the 40 years, reach the promised land, which is the next place that we want to go. So I'd just like to review with you, I know this is a very familiar passage, what we must avoid in order to not be doomed to the same fate as the Israelites were in the wilderness. Notice, and do not become idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Now, I know we live in a very sophisticated society, so we think, I mean, idolatry and these Israelites, you know, they worship different things. Idolatry today, there are any number of things. Idolatry is simply anything that we will put before God. Anything that we are not willing to give up because of faith in God. And obviously, I think we suffer from that a lot just because of the affluence that we have today. There's so much material, there's so many material things and technology that we tend to rely on technology, science, and material things instead of God. And again, I do not know, and nor do I claim to know, what will confront us over the next number of months. I do know this, that when we open back up, it will not be the same as where we stopped just 4 weeks ago. The economic damage that has been done during this shutdown is incalculable. And again, nobody knows what it's going to be like. So we need to look for our manna as we go through the wilderness, because we're going to need it. Continuing in Corinthians, nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did. And in one day, 23,000 fell. I mean, the behavioral psychology, if you will, of the Israelites in the wilderness was swift. I mean, they committed sexual immorality, and in one day, 23,000 died. I mean, you think of a pandemic, and this was in response to sexual immorality. Continuing, nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them did. Again, this connects back to Jesus Christ, that they tempted Christ and were destroyed by the serpents. Nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now, you know, complaining and murmuring, I mean, I know we don't do anything like that. You know, when I complain, it's justified. When you complain, it's justified, right? And then there, of course, is something that I've always called recreational complaining. You just complain because, well, it just feels good. And, I mean, this is our journey in the wilderness. And if I read my Bible correctly, murmuring and complaining is not a virtue, at least not the last time I checked. In this case, they were destroyed by servants when they tempted Christ and complained. Now, all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. I have often said, and I really believe this, that you can learn everything about human nature, management and leadership, by simply studying the journey of the Israelites from Egypt all the way to the Promised Land. You find everything there. I have a master's degree in organizational management, and I will tell you that I have learned more about organizational management from reading this story than I did in my master's degree. What I learned in my master's degree was largely what not to do. So when Paul is referencing back to the Israelite example, I would just like to highlight that these are very practical stories that show how people act and react under different situations. There is also the aspect of leadership and organization that Jethro provided to Moses, where there were leaders of 10, leaders of 50, leaders of 100, and leaders of 1,000 that provided a structure and an organizational structure that they were able to organize themselves with 3 million people. That's a lot of organization. So I would just encourage us to continue to study the journey in the wilderness, because we will find, as Paul suggested, examples of how we can effectively go into the wilderness. And believe me, we will be traveling through a desert land between now and the fall. We just don't know exactly what that looks like, and neither did the Israelites. The final admonition that Paul gives here in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12 is, "Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." Again, I think that this has more meaning today, particularly in the context of what we are experiencing as a world, because we thought we stood. You know, we were the best, we were great, had the best economy, and a insy-binsy virus from the opposite end of the world has brought us to, I guess we could say, almost to our knees. And the question now is how that we can get up. So now I'd like to pivot to the final go forward. The Israelites were first instructed to go forward into the depths of the sea, and then to go forward into the wilderness. They met God at Mount Sinai, made a covenant, and then they were to go forward to the land of promise. And that, of course, has New Testament and contemporary parallels. But I'd just like to take a look, again, this is a very familiar story, but look at what occurred when the Israelites were confronted with the choice of going forward into the promised land. And again, what they did, how they reacted, and how deeply embedded Egypt still was in their memories. It took actually, and this is interesting, it took 40 years for them, it took an entire generation to get beyond the slavery mentality that they had in Egypt. And that is largely also a psychological mindset. And I'm reminded when we lived in Germany right after the wall came down, and Eastern Germany had lived under communism for 40 years. And when they opened the wall, and democracy was made available to them, and freedom was available, it has taken another generation to fully embrace the freedoms of Western society. There are some things that, you know, it takes a generation to overcome, and this proved to be the case in the case of the Israelites. So now we go to Numbers chapter 13, pick out a couple of verses here to look at the account. "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers you shall send a man, everyone a leader among them." So they send out the spies, 12 of them. And, you know, they spied out the land, and you know the story. I want to highlight a couple of points. "So Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, according to the command of the Lord, all of them men who were heads of the children of Israel." So these were heads of tribes. They were recognized leaders of the Israelites that went in to scout out the promised land. And then we come down to Numbers chapter 13, verse 26. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron, all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And it was a really good story. I mean, they demonstrated and they showed that it was a land flowing with milk and honey. But here was the but. The command of the Lord from the time of the Box Canyon at the Red Sea was always the same, go forward. He sent them in to look at the land, and then the intent was for them to go forward and to conquer what had been promised to them. Notice what they said instead. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. There we saw the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. So were we in their sight. Again, this, we know that there were giants in the land that were somewhat larger than the Israelites, but not that much. I mean, this was a mindset. It was a mindset that they saw themselves as weak. And whenever we have a weak mindset by relying on ourselves instead of the commandment of God, it will actually become, as was the case here, a self-fulfilling prophecy. They kept saying, I mean, countless times they said, the Lord has brought us out to have us die in the wilderness. And finally, after this episode, God said, have it your way. And he led everybody that was over 20 years old to die in the wilderness, save Joshua and Caleb. They saw themselves as grasshoppers in front of the natives of the land. That was a very inaccurate, negative self-image that cost them their inheritance, and it will also cost us our inheritance if we have the same perspective. Continuing. This is the counter. Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. So you had 12 spies, two of which said, we can do this. The Lord will be with us. Let's go forward. This is an example, and there are many in the Old Testament, where the majority had it dead wrong. The minority had it right, but the majority ruled. And you know, you think about Joshua and Caleb having to endure the wilderness in the congregation of Israel for 40 years because the other leaders did not have the courage to go forward to the land of promise. That must have been very difficult for them to be walking around and wandering in the wilderness that entire time. So they conclude, I mean, the concluding statement here was in Numbers chapter 14, verse 4. So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. Let's go back, not forward. Brethren, as we leave the days of unleavened bread, let's look forward, because anytime we go back, the consequences are severe, as it was for them. And I could give you personal examples, which I don't have the time to get into today, on how that works when we go back instead of going forward. So I'd like to, as we conclude here, to pivot again to the New Testament, because the idea of going forward is not just a Old Testament Days of Unleavened Bread concept. It was very much, as we see here in Philippians chapter 3, something that Paul lived by. Brethren, I do not count myself to have apprehended, but one thing I do. I forget those things which are behind and reach forward to those things which are ahead. So we've had a great feast of unleavened bread, at least we did, albeit in isolation. And I, for one, can't wait until I can look into your faces instead of looking into the lens of a camera and get together on holy days as we are used to doing. But perhaps it wasn't so bad after all, because I think we will all appreciate it a lot more when we are able to do that once again. So I would just like to remind everybody to go forward, as we do today, into the depth of the sea. And in one sense, you know, we've renewed our baptismal covenant, and then go forward with confidence into the wilderness. And like I said, the wilderness of this world over the next 3 to 6 months will at best be difficult. So I'm also confident that God will rain manna from heaven for all of us, but we need to go forward with confidence and then be able ultimately to go forward into the land of promise.